Brett Thomas here. I'm here with Diane Hamilton. Hello, Diane.
Brett, hello. Good to hear your voice. Thank you for being interested in talking to me today.
Well, thanks for sharing your perspective. I should say to the folks listening, many of you are obviously very familiar with Diane's work. Perhaps some of you are not. Diane is one of the really integral leaders in the integral movement. That's how I think of it. Diane has been involved with Integral Institute and various other types of integral spiritual activities and teachings over the years. Diane and I taught at Integral Institute for many years together, so we've had the opportunity to sort of be in positions of leadership in terms of leading seminars together and leading some of our teams over the years. And Diane leads a lot of retreats. And I think when I think of the folks in the integral movement that are kind of, to me, show up as integral leaders, Diane is certainly one of those folks. So, Diane, thanks so much for just being willing to chat about this important topic, but perhaps a topic not explored a lot, which is the topic of integral leadership. But let's start with just giving us an update. What's been going on for you? What sort of things? I know you're getting ready to start a retreat. Just can you give us a little bit of the things that you're interested in and involved with these days?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, my fundamental reference point in my life is of course the spiritual one, and that's been true for many, many years. So I'm still involved in Zen practice and leading Zen retreats and entertaining a lot of the questions that are posed by integral related to spiritual practice, the relationship of waking up to growing up, and how the recognition of absolute reality, how that informs how we navigate the relative challenges we're in right now. So spiritual practice fundamentally, and then of course I do a lot of, as you know, mediation, communications kinds of work, and I'm currently working on my first book, which is a combination of those two things. It's really a handbook of you might say bodhisattva skills for 21st century spiritual practitioners. So negotiation theory, uses of influence, you know, things that come out of the basically the negotiation, communication, and mediation world. And so I'm working on kind of blending those two things. And then I always have I guess one of my fundamental loves, of course, is my love of nature. And so one part of the retreat that I'm doing this summer is out in the wilderness with a wilderness expert from down here in southern Utah, down in the desert. And I'm just going to spend time relating with Mother Earth and pay my respects. Because the one thing, if there's one thing I've learned, nature's a lot bigger than I am. So... you don't need a guru if you spend time in nature.
That's right. Nature's a great teacher.
Yeah.
You know, you are very versatile. You have, you know, you're involved in a lot of different, involved in leadership, if you will. I'm reminded of your work. Thank you for mentioning your work in mediation and negotiation and influence and effective communication. And I think that a lot of the skills that mediators like yourself study and practice are a lot of the same skills that effective leaders study and practice.
Yeah, right.
And it occurs to me that you have one of the things that I'm so glad that we have this opportunity to share your perspective is you have a perspective that's informed by a lot of different roles. You're a leader in the integral movement. You're a spiritual leader and teacher. You lead, negotiations and mediations and things like that. You're a business person. There in the life that you live, in your state, you've been involved with, the state on a number of different levels, and I guess the judicial system and all these things. So, do you have any broad kind of frame about? Just, integral leadership is kind of this narrow thing, but if we just back up for a minute, just leadership, it's this phenomenon that, is kind of all around us, and yet a lot of people probably would have a hard time defining it, and I think a lot of people have a lot of different opinions about what leadership is, and And what's your sense about being in and around leadership much of your life in so many different venues? What would you share with us that your experience of leadership is?
Well, and I think it's important, you know, one of the things I would like to talk about when we actually do the teleconference is I want to talk about the usefulness of cosmic address. I think it's important as practitioners that we kind of locate ourselves in the map. And so one of the things that I know about myself is that I'm a natural leader, and I often find myself in leadership positions or in leadership roles without necessarily seeking them out. And I haven't necessarily studied leadership either from an academic perspective or even, let's say, in the way that my husband, Michael Zimmerman, who's a former Chief Justice, he's kind of always been a student of leadership and also of politics, I would say, where I've been less a student of that. And so in a way, what I'm bringing to the conversation, you might say, is a kind of perspective of a naturalist, and one that can really actually be informed by people who've really thought about it and studied it maybe in much more depth than I have. But I would say one thing, which is we need good leaders. I mean, that's the obvious thing. We want good leaders. We will galvanize and organize around people who are good leaders but take us in a really bad direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we kind of want to pay attention to. Like, that phenomenon interests me, why it is we give our power and give so much influence to people sometimes who are taking us in a place we don't want to be. And I think that, you know, it's kind of hard. It's probably impossible to talk about leadership without talking about the person's relationship to power and influence. And of course, the shadow of leadership is always misuse of power or abuse of power. So on the one hand, when you're a leader, you're being given something by the people who are in your surroundings. And when you're a person and you're giving someone leadership, you're giving them authority, you're privileging their perspective, you're trusting them in a certain way to sort through all the various possibilities and to weigh all the different factors, and you're empowering them, you know, in order. And so, you know, there's always that question of responsibility, and also the shadows, of course, have to do with, corruption of power, corruption of use of resources, you know, corruption of all the things that leadership gives you. So that's something that just comes to mind for me.
I'm really glad you brought that up. I'm very intrigued to try to bring that theme of power into the conference. It's one that you pointed out as an obvious and kind of fundamental and important factor, and yet interestingly, some people shy away from exploring that. So it is very, very interesting. Would you talk a little bit more about this idea of cosmic address? I'm guessing that some percentage of our listeners are familiar with it, especially those that have read some of Ken's latest books. And then there's probably maybe even a third, or perhaps as high as a half of our listeners that maybe they've only heard the term, but they're not really 100% sure what it is. So tell us a little bit more about cosmic address and the relationship between that, theoretical construct, or depending on how you think of it, that idea, and leadership itself. What's your sense about that?
Well, the brilliance of the integral map is that it delineates, or it gives us a set of discriminations. You know, from a Zen perspective, all reality is one thing, and the distinctions that we make are not necessarily real. And on the other hand, the capacity to make distinctions, as Ken has pointed out over and over again, allows us to navigate the territory of our life much more fluidly, perhaps skillfully, with more intention and possibly success. You know, so what we found is that this map just has incredible utility to it. So what is cosmic address? Cosmic address is simply saying that in a conversation that I, let's say as a speaker, I want to tell you kind of who I am, how I locate myself, both in terms of my own, you know, development, and also we talk about the four quadrants, who I am as an individual, what my context, my culture is, what kind of systems I've worked in, because then that helps you understand why I have the perspective I have, because my perspective is not separate at all from what do we talk about these days? You know, my waking up, my recognition of absolute dimension of reality, my structure stage, you know, how developed I happen to be in terms of structure stages, and whether I've spent a lot of time in my interior or whether I've spent a lot of time working in the world. And all that really affects, you know, how we understand and will relate to the conversation we're having. So I think it's important for you to understand who I am as a listener and what my experience is and what the conditions are of my life that basically result in the perspective that I take on this topic.
So just let me, if I could, summarize. So a person's cosmic address is the sum total of all of the factors that have influenced that person's perspective up until that point. And we would mention their circumstances, systems that they're involved in, their culture, their individual behavior and you know, the physical body and so on and so forth, and then their sort of individual psychology. And so that's their cosmic address. And one of those things is a common theme, which is the worldview, right?
Their worldview, absolutely.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. At the very least, you want to know what their worldview is and perhaps their current circumstances. But then beyond that, you might want to know what they're capable of, their level of development, what's happening in their relationship. So that's
their natural gifts.
Right.
You know,
So what you're saying is cosmic address is important for leadership because you need to be able to have enough self-awareness to identify your own cosmic address and where your perspective is coming from. But then the other person's going to have a likely very different perspective than you, and they have a different cosmic address. And if you have some sense of their cosmic address, the more you know, probably the better. What does that allow you to do as a leader? I think that's where you were going to. I just wanted to kind of unpack that a tiny bit.
Yeah, and I hope that's clear to people. Yeah, but basically it's the sum total of all my parts that create the particular perspective that I want to offer. You know, so it matters that I'm a woman. It's matter that I've worked inside of institutions and organizations, that I've been within business settings but have spent a lot of time outside of business settings, you know, that I have some natural leadership capacity, which maybe it's a blend of charisma and having some kind of social skills that people recognize, but it's culturally bound. I'm American, you know, so how I operate as a leader may not work, you know, in other contexts.
Excellent.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Nice. So now in your own roles as a leader and your own experience, were you kind of intuiting where you were coming from and where the other people were coming from in terms of cosmic address until, you know, you started studying integral theory and using lenses to kind of analyze and have a...
Yeah.
So how did that trajectory go? You said you've naturally found yourself in positions of leadership, so perhaps you were doing this intuitively, but then you've been studying these maps, as many of us have, and now... If you're like, well, I know this about you because I've worked with you. You have the ability to recognize a lot about another person by getting to know them a little bit, talking to them, being aware of kind of what's going on for them, lots of clues, and you get a sense about their worldview and about a variety of things. So, can you say just a little bit more about what that looks like in practice, both before learning the maps and then maybe after learning the maps?
Well, let's just take the integral. You know, just the integral field that we operate in quite a bit. You know, I mean, there's just no question, you know, that in terms of cognitive capacity that Ken is just off the chart, you know, and that he can lead, both teach and lead in a way that's just incredible in terms of really opening up the territory for people's cognition. And I love that when people who have, you know, who have a really powerful cognitive line and want to be led, that Ken can lead them because he goes into territory they haven't been before and he takes them in directions that literally keep them up at night. And they're so incredibly awake and awakened through his, you know, through his cognition. You know, someone like Jeff Salzman, who developed that really successful business career track, or your colleagues at Stegen, the work that you've been doing with Rand. I mean, you've you know, put some real energy into creating an organization to train people in leadership skills, and you've been at it for a dozen or so years now, and you're starting to get some traction. So when it comes to actually running an organization, having to deal with profits and loss and dealing with your client base and all the challenges of marketing and, you know, just all the factors that go into running a business, you know, you're people in the community that have that particular leadership capacity. You know, Mark Goffney comes to mind in terms of someone who's just really able to galvanize energy. You know, I think about, for whatever reason, you know, some people just know how to kind of pull energy into a field, and he's very good at that. You know, I've never been around Oprah Winfrey, but she seems to be able to pull a lot of energy, you know, and I don't even know what you want to call that trait. And then, you know, how all of those might be rolled up into one person or into a team of people, a leadership team, you know, becomes the question. And I think teams are as important these days, and maybe even more important than individuals, in terms of creating, you know, powerful leadership fields, because the world has become so incredibly complex that it's very rare for any one of us to be able to do everything. And so probably one of the most important leadership faculties these days, and I guess this is one that apparently Abe Lincoln was famous for in that book that's going around that everybody's loving reading right now called The Team Arrivals, was his ability to bring the right people together. And, you know, just having an instinct for who the people are that can do what needs to be done. And so there's a lot to it. I think leadership is a very complex set of understandings and perceptions and talents and willingness to galvanize energy. And, you know, so it's a big topic. It's a big topic. And I like to watch good leaders and pay attention to them and see what it is that they do. My husband was the Chief Justice of our Supreme Court and ran the judiciary for he was the leader of the judiciary for 4 years, and he was, you know, helped to shape it for closer to 15 or 20. And he's an institutional leader. So when I talk about his cosmic address, where his real strength is in his institutions, not in catalyzing businesses or that kind of leadership, but rather the judiciary is a kind of institution that has a very, very long lifespan. And he has a tremendous amount of patience and takes a really long view and understands how slow institutions are to change compared to like a small entrepreneurial operation, you know, or an individual, you know, who's an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a huge topic and one that's, I'm happy to see you and others really diving into to see what the integral maps and integral understanding can bring to the discussion. I understand that you're writing a book about it.
Yeah, it's something that I'm very passionate about. And I think one of the reasons that I'm so intrigued by it and I find it so compelling, you know, you find interesting what you care about. And one of the things that you and I share and a lot of our other friends that have been doing these interviews and are going to be at the conference is we really do care about integral. We care about an integral community. We care about, if you will, popularizing some of the insights and the understandings that come out of having more of an integral worldview. And one of the things that I often talk with people about, a lot of our mutual friends and the folks in the integral community, is how can we have a greater impact? And you mentioned that sometimes, and this is a very big question I have, how is it that some people will willingly follow leaders to their own detriment? How is it that so many people will support, vote for or work for or, you know, follow leaders that are actually, you know, really leading them in a path that is not only very dangerous but in some cases very detrimental? And I've really been exploring this, and we see the movements in some of the political movements in this country, and about a third of our listeners are overseas, so it's not only U.S., but, you know, you see leaders all over the world that people are following, And in some cases, you see folks that, as people with an integral worldview, we might look at some of these other leaders, political leaders or organizational leaders, we might look at them with a little bit of judgment and think, you know, our worldview is a bit more complex than theirs. These folks are perhaps at earlier stages of psychological maturity. They're, you know, coming from a very kind of egocentric or, you know, very narrow worldview. And yet you look around, and those folks, those leaders that we might sort of look down as being not as complex or not as psychologically mature or not as spiritually realized, but they're the ones that have power and influence. And you look at some of the things like the Tea Party movement in this country, and, you know, they have a lot of power and influence. And you look at the integral community and the integral movement, and we have, I think, a lot of perspective, a lot of psychological maturity collectively. I think certainly a more complex worldview than certain other worldviews that are on offer out there, like the traditional and the modern and the postmodern. And yet, perhaps we don't have nearly as much influence as much. And so what's your sense about that? Do you have a sense about, is there a lesson in all this? Do we as an integral community have an opportunity to learn more about leadership or to bring more leadership?
If what I understand about through spiral dynamics and through what I've listened to Ken and others talk about, you know, something like 2.5% of the population has integral consciousness. So all the institutions and the systems that we've created come from other levels of development. And one of the things I've heard him say quite a few times is there's a certain kind of critical mass that's necessary before this particular wave of consciousness can hope to have a particular level of influence. And sometimes the old structures have to break down a little bit before the new structures can come forward and emerge. So I'm not surprised in a certain way that, you know, the Tea Party has influence in the United States, because it's very, you know, from a spiral dynamics perspective, it's very blue, and that particular structure has been in consciousness for a long time.
Right.
And the United States has a long history of populist movements that are suspicious of, you know, education and elitism and all that kind of stuff. And again, I'm not a student of politics, but I know that it's not uncommon in the history of the United States for that to be the case. And so I'm in a way, I think, you know, we might say that an integral, if you're a turquoise level leader, you know, really knowing how to hold the question and how to create the conditions in which some integral leaders might be able to emerge. And so what are the ways of actually doing that? And it sounds, you know, like you and Rand are actually doing that at Stegen in terms of creating a place to bring leaders who are at blue or at orange or green to come in and help them, disidentify with their position and learn how to become more flexible and in a way kind of support them. So I'm thinking that it's a bit of a conveyor belt kind of question, you know, one that we've talked about in the past, which is supporting people in moving into the next stage of development. So I think in a way that some of the best that we can offer is to support people in terms of moving into the next phase of development. And one of the things I was always surprised about, because in my own history, I was very, because I had early experiences that really, you know, I was really formed around the question that we live and die. So because death was important to me, I couldn't just concern myself with, you know, you might say the life side of the street. So I got very deep into contemplative practice. And then when I was in my early 30s, went to work in the mediation field and was hired as the director of dispute resolution. And what I found was that I was, you know, I was 34 years old, and within a year or 2 years, the entire system was asking me to give trainings to the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, national conferences of judges. You know, and we think of judges as some of the leaders, you know, in our country, and they would be listening to me. You know, why would they be listening to me? And I was just amazed that I would be teaching these people who were lawyers and who were PhDs and professionals. And it was because, for some reason, that where I had been was someplace they wanted to go. And because of that, there were things that I could offer them that they really wanted to hear about. And so I was in a teaching position in that I was able to teach them about communication and consciousness. And I was in a leadership position in that I started programs, I developed programs, I managed programs, and I helped introduce those and get those to work within the system and had a lot of success doing that. So I was both a teacher and a leader. But I was blown away by how willing that institution was to to work with me. You know, we have an idea that if, you know, people are at red or blue or whatever it is, that somehow we're not going to be able to communicate, and it's just simply not true. At least that wasn't true in my experience.
If we're skillful, right? If we're skillful, and to me, this is fundamentally what integral leadership is about, is being skillful.
Precisely.
Buddha called
yeah.
it skillful means, meeting people
right.
where they are. And I
yes.
think if we as students and practitioners of integral leadership,
yeah.
and I mean the
yeah.
practice, I don't mean being teal or turquoise, I mean
right.
the practice of integral leadership, at whatever stage of development we might be at in our various lines, if we can learn to be more skillful, understand people's cosmic address, like you said earlier, relate
mm-hmm.
with them in a way, it's kind of like if you go to a foreign country and you can speak their language, you tend
mm-hmm.
to get along a lot better. So it's basically learning to respect their customs and teach their and be able to speak a little bit of their dialect, even if it's not your home-based dialect. Then
invite them into the space that they're moving towards, because
yeah.
we all have in common that we want to be free, we want to be happy, we want to
yeah.
you know, have a certain level of material wealth, we don't want to be screwed over, you know, and then we have to work with shadow and corruption and all that business, because that always arises. But I think we also need to have a lot of faith in human beings' capacity to take the next step. And, you know, there is a directionality to our lives, and there is a directionality to human culture, and it isn't always the direction we'd like, but there's a movement. It's dynamic. It's not static. And so there are lots of opportunities to have influence, and we need to let go of a lot of our conventional ideas about how leadership should happen, and actually just be open to when and where and how. You know, and I think from that perspective, I'm an unconventional kind of leader. I don't tend to stay in institutions very long, but I come in, I have influence, and then I leave, and that's more my style.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I really appreciate you teasing out this important distinction of how there's all different styles of leadership for different contexts.
Mm-hmm. Completely different.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Well,
I went to, you know, Rand actually connected me with the Young Presidents Association, and I was invited to, and for our listeners, the YPO is a kind of an elite organization of business executives. You have to have a certain size business in order to belong to it.
Mostly CEOs, presidents and CEOs of
yeah.
really large size companies, yep.
Yeah, and so I was invited to speak, and once again, you know, what does a woman who's mainly done Zen practice and you know, ridden horses in the mountains have to offer to people who are running businesses? But in that particular case, I was able to talk to them and give them a teaching on development, a very integral teaching, moving from egocentric to ethnocentric to worldcentric to cosmic-centric, and then give them an experience using the Big Mind process.
Mm-hmm.
And they were absolutely 100% on board with what I presented, and they were inspired by it, and it was an awakening experience for many of them to see that actually each one of those was some part of their consciousness, and even though they hadn't ever consciously thought of themselves as cosmic-centric, they identified a feeling that gave them a great sense of expansion and belonging. And because of that, they were completely open to it. But I didn't call it a spiritual teaching. You know, I didn't even call it a psychological teaching. I talked about it as worldviews. And in their context of leadership, how to become more flexible with worldviews. So
mm-hmm.
that's just part of what we have to learn how to do.
And this is just to kind of, you know, wrap this up, is that's one of the reasons that I'm so glad that we're talking and that you're going to be at the conference. Whether, even though you've not been a formal student of leadership theory,
mm-hmm.
you're one of the few people of my friends, and thankfully there's a number of people, but not so many, in the integral movement that we could put in front of a bunch of, I'll
mm-hmm.
use kind of values colors with a nod to spiral dynamics, kind of orange and blue value
mm-hmm.
systems.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Or we might say modern and even traditional worldviews in
mm-hmm.
Fort Worth, Texas, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
right, right,
you know,
right.
That
yeah.
a bunch of CEOs,
mm-hmm.
you know, and here's a Zen teacher who comes in, who's, you know, on part of
mm-hmm.
the Integral Spiritual Center, comes in and gives a talk and gives them a state experience.
Mm-hmm.
And just really talk to them flat out about their own development and
mm-hmm.
and you're a big hit. To me, that's a kind of a version of integral leadership.
Yeah.
It's what the Buddha called skillful means.
Yeah.
I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I just really appreciate you, and I'm so glad that you're gonna be at this event. Just a final question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the integral community comes together ever so often. mm-hmm. in different size groups. This is going to be a pretty decent size group coming together in kind of conference call based and online format. And we're kind of in a unique place in the world. We're at a unique place in this country, and I think even the integral movement is in an integral community. Perhaps the beginning of a movement is kind of in an interesting place this summer, this year, in this decade, this century. Do you have any sense of any hopes that you would like to come out of your participation, as well as all the folks that are going to get to participate in this? What would be a hope that you that we might achieve or come away with this event, that we could hold that intention going into it?
Well, I mean, I think there are, one is, of course, what you're already talking about, which is just anytime the integral community kind of gathers and there's a body to it and people get to relate and talk to each other, I feel, you know, that's a fulfillment for me, because it is a movement that has some flesh and some body to it, and it's nice for us to continue to work together and get to know each other. So that's one. Another is, you know, just, you know, really user-friendly takeaways. You know, like listening, I listened to Barrett Brown the other day talk about his study on integral leadership and talking about the capacity of somebody at higher levels of development to create conditions for change and to be able to basically hold a question with wonder. And, you know, that was just a tidbit for me that I found very user-friendly and very helpful. I'm less interested in elaborate theoretical frameworks and more in just real, it's a little bit, you know, just how we talk about integral is sometimes psychoactive. You know, what's the psychoactive two or three tabs that we can take that actually will shift how we see it and how we work with it, work with people and ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, I'm hoping to learn that, and then it'll just also help me clarify my own thinking. So those would be what I would want.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for taking the time right before you go into your two-week retreat later this afternoon, and just always grateful to have the time with you, Diane, and grateful for your leadership. Thank you. And we'll be talking to you in a after you come off retreat during the conference itself.
Thanks to you and for pulling it together and for everybody who's doing this good work.
It's a labor of love. So
okay.
Yeah. Well, good talking to you, and we will talk to you soon, Diane. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, honey. Bye-bye. Bye.